Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn dope into DFS pro.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another DFS Army Bold Calls Fantasy Football season-long podcast. Today we're breaking down the running back position. We're gonna break down the tiers. We're gonna find some deep sleepers. We're gonna find the top plays. We're gonna have some fades for you guys, and some late round running back plays that are gonna help win your league. My name is Kevin Allen. I'm your host for today, and I've got, as always, my man with the plan, the number one season-long fantasy football analyst out there, season-long says. What's up, my brother?
What's up, my friend? We just can't quit each other, can we? We just keep coming back and doing this more and more and more. We're addicted.
Do you think we kind of like fantasy football? Is that a thing?
Maybe just a little bit, because we certainly don't like each other.
New. No, but I was going to say, I have a promotion. Like, for you guys listening, and Alan's wife, Stacy, is an incredible dietitian, has helped my wife out, miraculous planning and all that good stuff. So if anybody out there needs to feel better about themselves, about their eating and everything, contact him on Facebook, Twitter, some shit, and get in touch and follow. What's your wife's Facebook page?
That's generous of you. Here, to quickly, just not to bore the listeners, it's Heal From Food. But you can always tweet me, and I'll at Alan Says Lousy. It's in the comments here, and I could direct you. She's got a really good suggestions and free tips on just little tweaks and changes you can make in your diet that'll make a world of difference.
Miraculous stuff. You're selling her too short. She's awesome. All right, back into the thing we're here for and the thing we're most excited about, which is crushing our fantasy football opponents, making our friends feel terrible about themselves. That's really what it's all about. And today we're going to talk about the running back position because it's the most important position on your team. They're the most consistent scorers. It's who you're targeting in the first round. And I think what we're just going to do is talk about some tiers, start at the top, kind of go through the rankings, maybe talk about like these little, we'll get into some of the minutiae of, you know, do I like, McCaffrey more than Barkley and that kind of thing. We're going to talk about some fades or potential busts and then some late round running backs that have the potential to break out and win your league, be them recent draft choices or just sort of either backup players or players on teams where maybe the running back position isn't as solidified as we might think. So let's just start at the top, I think, Alan, and let's talk about tier one of the running back position, because I believe, you know, outside of two quarterback leagues, you know, the first five or six picks in the draft are going to be running backs. So
yeah, and from my experience, whether it's right or wrong, even in two quarterback leagues, it seems like those first four or five picks are still running backs, because if you take a running back, if you take a quarterback or Mahomes, one of those in the first few picks, you're not going to get as a high caliber running back in round two. Whereas if you take one of the top tier running backs, you'll still be very satisfied with the quarterback later on. So I still think in Superflex, there is a clear tier one of running backs that belong in that tier. And that's who we're going to talk about today.
Cool. All right. So let's just jump right into it, because I think these are the most obvious running backs. And I'm going to throw the names out of who I believe make up tier one. And without necessarily saying my specific order, and then lets you and I talk about where we rank some of these guys. So I believe the five running backs, and I'm going to make it five now in tier one at this point, are Barkley, McCaffrey, Zeke Elliott, Kamara, and David Johnson. Would you agree in terms of the tier that those are your elite running backs? And did I miss someone, or did I include someone that maybe doesn't belong in there?
Yeah, I would say that David, I agree with you. I think David Johnson belongs in that tier. The first four that you named, Barkley, McCaffrey, Kamara, Elliott, those are no-brainer. I don't even think we should discuss them. It's a little almost boring. Everyone knows to take them at the top. David Johnson and Melvin Gordon are the next two, and I think that's going to be a tough decision for a lot of players. Melvin Gordon just does it year over year, and David Johnson looks – I mean, even though he hasn't really had that big season since 2016, he's set up in this high-powered offense, and there's a lot of upside there. So you have it right. There is a clear first tier. But I would like to take David Johnson out of that and put that in the next tier with Melvin Gordon when we're organizing our cheat sheets.
So you're taking Alvin Kamara, because to me Alvin Kamara is actually the bottom of tier one. I think Barkley, Elliott, and McCaffrey. I almost maybe would take Kamara out of tier one at that point and put him in tier two with Gordon and David Johnson, because Kamara just is not going to see. I mean, he was amazing without Ingram last year. It's really tough. But he just doesn't see that level of volume all year long. Like, those games without Ingram, when he was getting 20-plus touches, no one could stop this guy. But when they took his touch level down to about 15, he wasn't really putting up the numbers that kind of compared with maybe Christian McCaffrey, Zeke Elliott, and these other guys who were – even Melvin Gordon from last season, who were really up top. Do we think that Kamara is going to see enough volume this year to justify being the top pick, or will the Saints just kind of slide Lats Murray into that Ingram 14 sort of plotting carries a game role?
I think I could change your mind with a couple quick numbers here. Don't worry about the workload for Alvin Kamara. He's just so efficient. You know, he had 18 touchdowns last year, and he's averaged over 80 catches a year in his first two seasons. You're not going to have to worry about it. He's so involved in the passing game. There's games where he gets you 10 and 12 receptions. His floor is about 5 or 6 receptions a game. You don't need to worry about that. Safely stick him in tier one with the other guys, that be it, at the bottom of that tier. He is the main focal point. Like you said, Mark Ingram chewed into that workload a little bit when he came back from his 4-game absence at the beginning of the year, but he's not there anymore. It's Latavius Murray. And again, that is someone that they are going to utilize. They did pay him and they're going to use him, but not nearly the skill level of Mark Ingram. Safely stick Alvin Kamara in tier one.
It truly is amazing when you look at the stats from a lot of these running backs, just that the great ones, the great fantasy scorers, basically function as a full blast wide receiver one and a running back. Like, if you look at these reception totals from some of this group, like Christian McCaffrey had 107 receptions last year. That's pretty much right in line with the top wide receivers in terms of volume. And even Zeke Elliott had 77 receptions. So, like, he's right up there with a top level receiver. You had Barkley at 91.
Up until last year, that was kind of the knock. That's why three years ago, you took Zeke third. That's why we were taking David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell ahead of them, because those were the 80 reception guys, and Zeke was like the 35, 40 catch guy. Last year, like you just mentioned, Zeke got 70-plus catches. So he's no longer, you know, the third or fourth guy. He can be a locked-in first overall pick if you'd like. Barkley, Elliott, McCaffrey, you could pick either one of those guys to go 1, 2, or 3 in any order. Again, the only reason we're considering Kamara as the fourth person, and I wouldn't be surprised if someone took Kamara first, is because of the lower carry totals, but he's racked up the touchdowns. He's thought of as a pass catching back. He actually has workhorse back size. He's 5'10 and 215 pounds. He is stout, solid, strong. He came into the league with that narrative, but his size, speed, and production shows that of only a workhorse back. So those first four, I think we've said it all. There's not much more to say. That's your locked-in first tier.
All right, so let's jump down to this next tier then, because there are a couple other potential candidates that are coming off of situations that maybe weren't as great last year, who could potentially break out here in this next group. Like, I don't think I think we've seen, for example, Melvin Gordon's upside and his ceiling. I don't think Melvin Gordon is going to surprise us with doing more. He missed a bunch of games last year, so it's tough to sort of look at his statistics and really extrapolate them. But, you know, when he plays, he's been really, really great. I mean, there's no denying it. Again, a step down from these other group. But the two from last year that are coming off, I would say, down years or didn't play or different situations are David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. We know Le'Veon Bell, for example, has been an 80 reception type back in his career. He's been just a monster volume guy. Can he get to that this year with a new team? We don't know. Same thing with David Johnson. We've seen him as a monster volume back. Can this new coaching staff get him back to who he was before the disastrous regime came in last season and just run him up the gut stupidly over and over and over again? So, like, does he get back to himself? Those are the mysteries that push those guys down a bit.
Yeah, if you're picking, you know, in the middle of the first round, if you're pick 5, 6, 7, and Melvin Gordon, I'd say you click it. You know what you're getting. There's a very safe floor there. The upside is built in. Sure, is there risk for some missed games? There's for running backs, there always is. You're always going to have an added risk because running backs are taking those hits. But Melvin Gordon is as safe as it comes. I'd have no problem at pick 5, 6, 7 taking him. I think the most interesting running backs in round one, the ones that we need to talk a little bit more about, Le'Veon Bell, for the reasons you stated, new coach, crazy coach Adam Gase, who it's come out that he didn't even want him there. So how does that dynamic play?
And let me add to that. I'm going to add to that. And a guy in Adam Gase who has ruined or not exploited what has appeared to be high-level running back talent in the past.
Yeah, I mean, there's coaches that just don't utilize their best players, and as fantasy players, we scream and yell at the TV. Adam Gase just doesn't even have it. He's more dangerous because he doesn't have any rhyme or reason. Kenyon Drake on the Dolphins would bust off an 80-yard run and clearly be the most dynamic running back, and then he would just get benched for like two games in a row. Like, there was no rhyme or reason. He's dangerous, which adds risk to Bell. Now, on the other side, they paid him the king's ransom. They are just going to run the tires off him. But, again, there's always that risk. So Le'Veon Bell around pick 8, pick 9 is an interesting first-round pick. In best ball season, I've done it. If you want to start with a running back and you're around there, that's going to be your best available. At this point, I'm not 100%. If I had a big entry fee on the line, I'm not sure I can click it. I'd probably pivot the receiver, but he is going to be one of the more interesting first-round picks this year.
Well, I'll throw out another name here because we're in this little section, and this is an interesting section of the draft. Well, let me start with this. Joe Mixon is in this category, right?
Okay, good. I'm glad you finally said that, because on our last podcast, since the beginning of the year, I was telling you that Joe Mixon belongs in the first round, and that it's just people aren't used to seeing him there, so that's why he was getting pushed to the second. Sharp drafters are going to take Joe Mixon in the first round. So are you on board with Joe Mixon as a first round pick?
I am on board with him as a first round pick, and I'm on board with him more so as a tier two running back in this group, right? So
for your listeners, tier two, you still mean an RB1, a top 12 RB. You just mean not as the top of the elite, not a top 5.
Yeah, we're just trying to differentiate between that group that is as locked down 100%, going to put up big numbers for you every week if they stay healthy group.
Are you taking Bell or Mixon? Like, at this point, where are you?
That's the good question, right? So that I think that's a reasonable – and I'll throw James Conner, the Terminator, in that group. You and I will talk about Todd Gurley and why we don't like him here, but I put Dalvin Cook in this group as well. And it's this big sort of mix of – there's some questions here. If you look at Joe Mixon – actually, shockingly, the issue for me is I like running backs on winning teams. That's a problem for me because we're talking about a bunch of guys with a question mark here. I don't think the Jets are a winning team. I don't think the Bengals are a winning team. I do think.
Yeah, but about those two guys. Now, you said about the winning team, and I totally agree with you. And I interrupted you, but Bell and Mixon catch passes, and when you catch 80 plus passes, that's the great equalizer because you'll be on the field in catch up mode catching those passes. So that does sort of mitigate that risk a little bit.
I agree. I actually think Le'Veon Bell's going to beast this year. Now, I don't know if that's my – see, normally my Jet fandom has me off of Jets players. So I don't think it's my Jets fandom like being – I don't really have a fanboyish sort of approach to fantasy football, if you know me. That just doesn't exist for me. But I think Le'Veon Bell's going to beast this year. I think – but again, that's because I come with a logical thought of, wow, the Jets have no other talent on offense except for this guy. And if they're not giving him the football 25 to 30 times a game, they'd be pretty stupid. But then again,
yeah, that's logical. That's logical. But we just said the Adam Gase factor is so crazy, man. I mean, he didn't want this guy on the team, right? He wanted to spend less money and get Tevin Coleman. So he doesn't want to, I mean, he could, in his mind, if you want to get inside his mind, he could say something like, hey, I don't want to be proven wrong. I'm not going to give this guy 25 touches, and if he ends up with 1,800 total yards, I'm going to look like an idiot for not wanting him.
I feel like if you looked inside his mind, all you would see is a bowl of Fruit Loops. It would just be floating around like fucking Fruit Loops.
And conversely, Joe Mixon, right? They have the new coach in Cincinnati, Zach Taylor, who comes from the Sean McVay Rams setup over there. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be the Rams. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're going to turn into this prolific offense. But they're going to not be with the sluggish, old-school thinking Marvin Lewis offense. There is a new regime there that is going to be a little bit more forward-thinking. And Joe Mixon already showed he could be an elite RB1. Now he just has to do it every week like some of the guys at the top we've talked about. This is the last time you're going to be able to get Joe Mixon at the end of the first round. Next year, he's going to be locked into that elite tier.
Absolutely. Now, so for ranking purposes, because I want to talk about the Terminator in a second, but I have him below this group. I have him below Bell. I have him below Mixon. And I have another player that I'm putting above the Terminator in my personal rankings, Dalvin Cook. So, but I want to get to that. But, you know, if we're looking at this tier, for me, it would go – again, David Johnson, Melvin Gordon, interchangeable. Then I've got Bell and Mixon, interchangeable as well. And if you're a little more risk averse, I would put Mixon first and then Bell. And now we get to James Conner, Dalvin Cook. Right now, Conner looked really good last year. He's on a team that produces very nicely for the running back position. Can't go wrong. Dalvin Cook had some injury issues early in the season last year, came on strong late, only played probably around 11 games, 40 receptions, 133 attempts. If you extrapolate that to a full season, you know, he's right up there with any of the elite tier running backs in terms of volume. So are you on board with this? Am I on an island in having Dalvin Cook right there or even just ahead of the Terminator, James Conner?
Okay, first, because I don't want to get bombarded with tweets. You know, the Terminator, is it John Connor?
I know, but the James Connor is what? That's his nickname. I know, man. I'm well aware.
What do your subscribers say about it? Do you get bite back on that or no?
No, my subscribers like my ridiculous nickname. I have nicknames for everybody. I have nicknames for all these players.
This is your show. I will go with it. Okay, so all the players that you name, Connor, Cook, that tier. Okay, these are still low-end RB1s, but the receivers are the one belong over them. You start taking Davante Adams, you start taking Odell Beckham, Julio Jones is as well. You want to take those elite receivers, Hopkins. You want to take those receivers before those guys. That's my personal strategy. Because those running backs that you name, Connor, Cook, those guys come with some added risk. Connor last year looked like a strong running back one, but Jalen Samuels came in and he proved that he could be a very efficient in that system. I think that Connor wore down a little bit towards the end of last year. I still think Connor's going to be the lead running back in that system, but I do see a potential scale back of his workload. Plus, they drafted fourth-round rookie Benny Snell, and I think he's going to be like a fan favorite there. And if he gets up on the goal line and they give him that 1-yard plunge, I could just see the fans yelling, Snell, Benny, something like that. I do think there's some added risk with Connor, although we both agree Connor's a great player. So he'll go around the 1-2 turn. I can't see him slipping past pick 14, 15.
Can you see Cook going ahead of him? Cook, who has less competition on his team, defensive team, definitely a winning team.
Yeah, I mean, it's either or. I personally like Connor. Dalvin Cook's injury history scares me a little bit. There's a rookie running back that they drafted in Minnesota that I like, Mattinson, who would be a wise handcuff. You and I don't like handcuffing, but I think this is a high upside premium handcuff. We'll talk about him later in the pod when we talk about rookies. So either one of those guys belong on the turn. Again, I advise the receivers ahead of those two. Now, who falls squarely in the mix, we're ignoring the elephant in the room, is Todd Gurley. Now, back in I think about a month ago, I introduced the idea of you of pushing Todd Gurley out of the first round. You were receptive to it. I think people have now caught up on that. It's obvious. It's all over every Twitter page, every Facebook page. Now I think what sharp drafters are doing are discussing if he even belongs in round two. So let everyone else discuss whether he belongs at pick 8 or pick 12. I don't think we could take this guy in round two. I think the decision point for him comes when we're talking about running backs like Marlon Mack and Leonard Fournette. I think that's where we're going to have to make a decision on Gurley. Personally, I'm passing at this point.
It's a brutal thing because it's really just a health issue that we're trying to assume and predict that we know what we're talking about. But it was some weird shit last year, and you don't leave your best player out of the fucking Super Bowl if he's okay. And they kept saying he's fine, he's fine, he's fine. So we know the Rams are lying about his health as well, and that's really disturbing because I can't, you know, we're trying to listen to a team telling you stuff, and no, it's not the knee, he's fine. No, they're lying. So,
well, Gurley had these problems going back to his college days. He had, they said this was going to be an issue, and sure enough, 4 years later, it is. And their actions tell you a lot as well. Their backup running back, Malcolm Brown, was signed to an offer sheet we talked about on the last pod by Detroit immediately, without hesitation. The Rams matched it to bring him back. He knows the playbook. He's a plus blocker. And then they moved up in the draft to take Darrell Henderson, who was a highly touted prospect in the third round. And as we know, third round draft capital for running back is significant. So those two moves alone show me that they are at least at very minimum concerned with Gurley. And again, it's not that we don't think Todd Gurley is going to be a good player for fantasy. It's that we think that the other players you could draft in the late first round and certainly all through the second round come with a lot less significant risk. And that is really what fantasy is about. Not that we don't think Todd Gurley is going to be good or that he could be good. It's that so many of your players get injured during the season. Why do you want to start week one with an injured player at that cost?
And not to mention a guy who clearly – is not going to be the volume machine that he had been to produce those massive numbers. Part of producing at the running back position, and this is I'm going to take this over from Daly a little bit, and it applies to everything, but opportunities, touches. Now, this seems like ridiculously obvious, but the total fantasy points scored to the running back position is, of course, directly correlated to how many touches they get, how many opportunities. Now, again, it sounds super obvious, but it's the most important thing. How many times this guy – that's why I look for running backs that are going to be on the field on third down. I want the volume. I want guys who are going to be in the game when the team is ahead and when they're behind, which, again, that's easier. That's part of what those top-tier guys are for the most part. These are players that are out there no matter what. And then we get into this section of, like – hey, with Gurley, it's just he's hurt all the time now, or he's got the knee issues, and they're just spelling him. So he went from this workhorse guy who was going to get 30 touches per game to now, like, I don't even know. Is he an 18-touch-per-game guy? It's a lot less. So that's fine if I'm comparing him to Marlon Mack or Derek Henry, other guys, or Aaron Jones, who are all going to expected to get, I don't know, 14, 17 touches per game. But, you know, you don't want that ahead of somebody who's going to get 25. So that's the main concern with Gurley and of course, getting hurt.
Do you want me to make – can I make a prediction about what's going to happen with Gurley? And then I would like to hear if you think that this is feasible. I think that we're even adding more mystery to everything. We're not going to see Todd Gurley in the preseason, not one snap, okay? And then I think they are going to hold him out, not put him on PUP, not put him on injured reserve. They're just going to hold him out for the first 3 to 4 games he's going to get. He might be inactive. We won't know. I think they're going to go week by week. So I think those who draft Gurley, and it's just a prediction. It's based on all of the – right now we're just detectives. You know, I mean, we're not planting our flag on any specific players right now. We're not making definitive statements. You notice we always say right now. We're just gathering facts. We're like detectives. And right now with all the facts that you and I have gathered, that is a prediction that I'm going to make. I'm not planting my flag saying definitely don't draft Todd Gurley. I'm just saying is that I think when you draft him, you have to expect that they're going to hold him out for a few games. And then you know what that means. That means we got to be very interested in the rookie running back and in Malcolm Brown in the later rounds.
Absolutely. And I do like that that rookie for the Rams. The tough part is you don't know if it's going to be the rookie or Brown or a combination of both in case that
get
Gurley
both.
Is out.
Yep.
Yeah, you want
in that offense, get them both, man. They're both affordable. Right now, Henderson's in like the 7th round. I predict he'll go up to the 4th or 5th, which we'll have to reevaluate then. And if you're drafting now, Malcolm Brown is available in the 12th, 13th round. So right now in best ball, you can get them both.
I like it. Now, let's jump into what I call, this is another – the next tier down, we'll call it tier 3 or whatever. A lot of these guys are going to be yardage and touchdown running backs for the most part. You're not going to get as many receiving yards or reception points from some of these guys. Other ones have either volume concerns, role concerns, things like that, or injury concerns, and that's why, even though they are the starters for their teams, that's why they're falling into this category. And we'll just start to kind of hammer through some of these names here without spending a ton of time on it, because I do also want to get to some later round kind of sleepers, some handcuff types, and maybe later round plays that could win you your leagues and all of that. But, I mean, the first
one... As you go through the names, if there's something that sticks out, I'll jump in to make a comment because I did write a few of these guys down. So I'm interested to see who you put in these next two tiers.
Absolutely. And I think the next guy that comes up is Nick Chubb. Super exciting offense. So we've got Dalvin Cook out of the way. I'm still holding off on Gurley here. We're jumping into tier 3. I've got Nick Chubb right at the top of the tier. Ton of volume. Really out there when his team is winning. Cleveland looks like a team on the rise, big time. And as much as this guy has a terrible reputation in terms of not getting a whole lot of action in the passing game, he did have 20 receptions last year. Okay, he's the goal line back. And the big question mark with him, in my mind, is late in the season, whenever Kareem Hunt is available, does this become some sort of a timeshare to where exactly when we need him the most in the fantasy playoffs, all of a sudden Chubb's volume is dropping. So I'm interested in your take on Chubb and any concerns about Kareem Hunt coming in and taking him out.
Okay, so let's start in the back and work forward. So with Kareem Hunt, I see people drafting him. Don't draft Kareem Hunt in redraft. Okay, and then I'll come back to why. Nick Chubb, draft him in the second round. He should be a late first round pick, but because Cleveland signed Kareem Hunt, that has pushed him to an extreme value in the middle or end of the second round. He's going to be a touchdown machine. I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Chubb leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns. I could see a season where he gets 18, 19, even 20 touchdowns. Yes, he hasn't caught the ball a lot yet, but who's to say that he won't? Even if he gets you 29 receptions, 33 receptions, that's something. Kareem Hunt suspended for 8 games, and I'm not sure where Cleveland's bye is, but let's just say that it's somewhere in the middle. That's a 9th game. You're not going to get Kareem Hunt's not going to be there until week 10. And then what do you think? Kareem Hunt's just going to come in right off the street and steal Nick Chubb's workload when he's dominating?
I think we can agree. If you drafted Kareem Hunt in a redraft league, you don't understand fantasy football at all. For somebody to do that is just ridiculously stupid.
You're just burning a roster spot. Now, if week 4, week 5 comes and he's on the waiver wire, sure. I advocate picking him up. You never know. Kareem Hunt was a great player when he was on the field. But again, let's say Nick Chubb is having the season we think he's going to have, and he's just totally dominating. I think Kareem Hunt's reintroduction into the offense is going to affect Duke Johnson. I think Duke Johnson's going to have a nice role. He's a great double-digit round pick, but I think that's the role that Kareem Hunt assumes, which is some passing down work, some change of pace work. Nick Chubb is, for 2019, is the locked-in workhorse dog. Now, if Kareem Hunt comes back, gets comfortable in the offense, and shows that he is the Kareem Hunt that was really good on the Chiefs offense, sure, we may have a potential issue for 2020. But for 2019, first 8 weeks, usually in the first 8 weeks of your fantasy season, you're going to know what your fate is. So if you're 6-2, you're rocking.
Yeah, what I was going to say, would you agree? Cause I mentioned Chubb, and I didn't give a bunch of names because I really do think he is a level above this next group. That I'm going to say, and I'm going to actually throw out a few, but would you agree that he belongs right after the Mixon, Cook, Connor grouping, like, very comfortably?
I believe he belongs in that group, but I understand with that extra risk of the perception of Kareem Hunt, the lack of pass catching of some of those other guys, so yes.
Well, I mean, would you put him ahead of Connor or Mixon or Bell? I mean, who are you putting him ahead of?
I think you have it right, the way you laid it out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just throwing out numbers based on, you know, my initial thoughts, but, you know, absolutely. All right, so let me...
Do you agree with my logic on Chubb?
Yeah, I think Chubb is... I think people are mistaken to worry about Kareem Hunt, actually. And I think with Duke Johnson disgruntled and requesting a trade, we don't know what's going to happen there. So if that does happen, and let's say he is cut or traded... All of a sudden, you have to expect that Chubb will get a little more use in that passing game early on, and then maybe they bring in Kareem Hunt later. See, the thing with Kareem Hunt, here's what happens. People always fuck this up. When a guy's out for 10 weeks, they come back, they're not in good shape, it takes a few weeks to get into game plan shape. By the time he's even, you know, up to speed, it's week 13, it's week 14, it doesn't feel like a scenario to me where I'm too worried about it, where he's going to really mess with Chubb's volume all that much. So I would just negate the whole Kareem Hunt thing and not worry too much about it at all.
That's more or less what we agree. All right, yeah, move on.
All right, so let's just talk about this group because everybody has a question. I'm going to throw out some of the questions I have on them, and then maybe you can help us rank some of these guys. So Marlon Mack, great team, Colts, doesn't catch many passes, but on a winning high-scoring team, seems to be the primary guy and did have some receptions, although a little bit less than Kareem Hunt. You've got Damian Williams coming in as the anointed starter for Kansas City, one of the highest scoring teams in the league. But Damian Williams does not have pedigree and, you know, could falter. But if he does get to play out the season.
It did pay him, though.
Yeah.
It did give him a 2-year.
I expect he'll be great. I mean, he's here for a reason, right? But he could falter. He is not a player that comes with a pedigree. But he looks great, and he's on the right team. Kansas City's offense is just an offense I want as much exposure to as possible. But there's some risk there. You've got Leonard Fournette, oft injured, but on a new regime team, which is interesting. You've got Aaron Jones. They don't want to give this guy workhorse touches. You've got Devonta Freeman, seems all by himself with a new offensive coordinator, potential to kind of have a great year, but he's never had a great year before, in my opinion. So I don't really trust players to do things that they don't always do, and he's oft injured as well. And Derrick Henry, yardage and touchdowns, but kind of broke out last year. Lots of attempts, great touchdown numbers, 215 carries, and he didn't really even start getting carries until a few games into the season. 12 touchdowns is a really good number. Even got some receptions. So, And would you throw Kerryon Johnson in this group as well? So I'm gonna throw that out to you. Is a Kerryon Johnson, a Josh Jacobs belong in that group as well? And I know I threw out a lot of names that you're gonna have to remember here, so I'm glad I don't have to remember them. But give me some order rankings for you in terms of that group that I just threw out there. Where they belong? Who's at the front? Are you taking Aaron Jones ahead of, you know, Kerryon Johnson and? You know what I mean? Break this section down, because I think this is that area when you get to it in your draft, you're kind of like looking like, I don't know about this guy. There's a couple guys. I know for me, Aaron Jones and Devonta Freeman are kind of like not running backs I'm excited to have on my team. But you might feel differently. So give me and Fournette, always with injuries, but a new regime. I'm a little nervous about him. Break it down for me.
Okay. Fournette, I think is in a good spot to produce this year, because remember last year he was going at the end of the first round. Fournette does have an injury history, which is why he's now in the end of the second, beginning of the third round. But when he's on the field, he does produce. He's a polarizing player, whether he's good or not. But the way Jacksonville is built, I still think they're built for the run. They have obviously upgraded a quarterback. So I still like Fournette at the head of this group. Marlon Mack is definitely an interesting pick. He's in a great offense. Nothing in the offseason has changed with that backfield. They didn't upgrade. They didn't add a rookie. They still have Nyheim Hines there, Jordan Wilkins as well. They added Paris Campbell, wide receiver, who definitely should soak up some of those short targets. But I still think Marlon Mack is in a really great position to produce. So I probably have Fournette a little bit ahead of Mack, but that would be my order, Fournette then Mack. Now, some of the other names that you put out there, you put Damian Williams, whose ADP is ahead of both of those guys. Now, as a general rule, and again, we have to look at each situation specifically, but as a general rule, the guy that has been doing nothing for his whole career and then comes out of nowhere at the end of the season and then his ADP is in the first two or three rounds, I usually fade. Okay, this reminds me a lot of Justin Forsett when he broke out, and then the following year, he definitely didn't meet his ADP. Now, the other side of that is that this Kansas City offense, they did extend him. They have made some public statements about how he will be the lead back. But I don't like drafting Damian Williams in the end of the second round where he's going right now. I think that Carlos Hyde, I know you don't love him as a player, but I think that he has just as much of a chance to become a majority shareholder of that backfield.
By the way, that's very bold. We talk about bold call. That's what, to say he has just as much of a chance as bold.
Right. Just as much of a chance to, at some point of the season, have the larger share of that backfield. I see why people are getting aggressive with Damian Williams. I like Damian Williams, but I will probably stick to my philosophy, which is the guy that comes out of nowhere, that ADP jumps from undrafted to the second round, I'll usually fade. I'll make money that way. Now, I won't always be right. If you did that with Arian Foster the year that he blew up out of nowhere, and then you were wrong.
Wait. But that, if you did that with Thomas Rawls after he broke out with Seattle, you did pretty well.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I think you're going to be more right than wrong by following that philosophy. So that's where I stand on Damian Williams. Now, Aaron Jones, we know he's the best running back on that team. Now, you mentioned that he wasn't given workhorse responsibilities, that he wasn't played as much as he should. Now, remember, Mike McCarthy is out of there. Now we have Matt LaFleur there, who has identified that Aaron Jones is the best running back. Aaron Rodgers, who his leadership has been questioned at times for some reason, but I think he just has a high expectations of his players. He has made some public statements how Aaron Jones has fixed his diet. We talked about diet in the beginning with my wife's dietitian skills, but this is something that athletes are now coming into focus with, that they're changing their eating habits in order to enhance their performance. This guy, they said, by all Aaron Jones, by all accounts, is different. His body formation is different and his work habits are different. So I was a little soft on Aaron Jones coming into the season, but with the new coaching regime, things are pointing up for him. I'm still proceeding with caution, but I think Aaron Jones is a safer pick in the third round than I thought.
I was going to throw in, for my personal strong opinion on running backs, we want running backs on teams that win games. And, you know, these are the Packers. They look good this year. They're going to be a team that wins a lot of games. The negative for Aaron Jones would be, these are the Packers. They're in a very tough defensive division. So, you know, there are going to be some games against teams like Chicago and Minnesota where you're not, like, super excited about ceilings for the player. But I think Jones catches passes, and it's just not all that big of a deal.
If you look at his numbers, he hasn't been a huge pass catcher, believe it or not. You would think that a player like that would, but if you want to look up his numbers.
I have all the numbers. I mean, he had 26 receptions last year.
That's not a lot.
But for a part-time player, it wasn't terrible. So my thought, he only played 12 games, but more importantly, you're right. I don't know why the fuck they were throwing at Jamal Williams. Some things defy logic.
Jamal Williams, here's the thing. So something that fantasy players forget a little bit is that you have to start getting into these coaches' heads, which is almost impossible. But the first skill you need to be a running back who plays in the NFL is you need to be a good pass blocker, especially when you're talking about veteran quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. If you can't pass block, you're not even going to get on the field. Jamal Williams is an elite pass blocker and a competent runner, and Aaron Jones, by all accounts, was lacking that skill. Again, all the public statements and all the sentiment coming from the Green Bay beat writers is that Aaron Jones is honed in on that skill and that he's improved. So I think we're going to see a little more consistency from him, which warrants his draft position.
Nice.
Just quickly, the last person on that in that tier you talked about was Devontae Freeman. Now, Freeman is going at the end of the third round, which is, you know, it's the cheapest he's been in years. Now, here's the good on Freeman.
But by the way, I did throw Kerryon Johnson into that group as well.
Okay. We'll get there. And then we can ping pong back and forth. But Freeman is the most interesting of these players because this is the cheapest he's been. He strikes me more as a fragile veteran. I think there's other players in tiers lower I'd rather have. But this year does set up well for them. Dirk Koetter, the coach of Tampa last year, who's a former offensive coordinator for Atlanta, is back now. Freeman did have some of his better years when Koetter was there. And they did draft two, not one, but two offensive linemen in the first round. This does set up well for Freeman, but personally, I've been passing. Probably I'm going to have to go get a little Freeman in some of these later best balls. He does strike me as a fragile veteran, but it does set up well for him. You want to talk about Kerryon, or do you want me to jump in here?
I know you love Kerryon, and I love Kerryon's chances this season. He looked pretty good last year in limited attempts. We had 5.4 yards per carry, which is fantastic. He didn't get workhorse volume until sort of quite a few weeks into the season. And, you know, the Lions stubbornly were sticking with LeGarrette Blount for just inexplicable reasons, to be quite honest. And they also continue to roll out their specialist pass-catching running back. So we know this Lions team has a great opportunity for running back scoring. They've just split it three-way a lot in the past. And so I guess my question for you is, do you think Kerryon Johnson now is ready to step up and be the bell cow for this team?
Yeah, a lot of these sophomore running backs are going to be interesting to figure out. Darius Geis, Kerryon Johnson, Sony Michel, one of them is just going to explode, and a couple of them we're never going to hear from again. You and I both love Kerryon Johnson. He doesn't really run, he glides. He's up. He's a tall runner. We love all his all-around skills. Now, you hit on the problem with Detroit. Even Kerryon himself, when he was going through the draft process, told coaches, he told GMs, he doesn't see himself as a workhorse back. He sees himself as a stronger when he's in a committee. These are his own words. Mm-hmm. So I think with Theo Riddick, who's still there, he's old and we hate Theo Riddick as a player, but
no, we hate him because he steals fantasy points from whatever other player we want to get those points.
Right. He's still one of the better pass catching running backs. So upside is capped. And I forget who they brought in as a hammer now. Is it like Zach Zenner? It's one of those.
Do they have another hammer over there? Oh.
They have a hammer, and they did draft somebody too. I don't think the player they drafted is any immediate threat. But I just see, as much as we love Kerryon Johnson, the upside may be capped a little bit. But the price you're paying, which is a late third, early fourth, it's worth it. So we love the player, and things break right. We're not going to be shocked when he's a top seven back, but there is some added risk there. But if you're taking Kerryon Johnson in the third, fourth round, the chances are you went receiver early, and it's a perfectly nice pick over there. So we agree that he is below the others only because of the capped upside.
Let me throw some names out here in this general vicinity of players. And let's see who we like a little bit more, a little bit less, maybe a little more or less than the market, but more or less amongst this group. So couple names that were big last year. We had Chris Carson just doing really good things for Seattle, who is a team that is just going to feed their running backs volume. 247 attempts last year, 4.7 yards per attempt. Got some tutties. You know, he's got a little bit of competition with Rashad Penny. for touches, and Seattle's really weird about the way they use their players and volume and all that, so there's a little risk there. You've got Mark Ingram, who is with a new team. Baltimore going to have 30, 35 carries available to various running backs per game. You know they're just going to run the shit out of the football. So while I don't think Ingram will get all of those, we only need 20 for him in this area, though I don't think he'll do much passing game work. You've got Josh Jacobs, the rookie for Oakland. They don't have anyone else. I don't know if they're going to be a winning team, but they don't have anyone else, so he should get some volume. Of course, Sony Michel, a.k.a. Oh, man, I can't remember his rapper name. Fuck. What? All right.
I still refuse to listen to his hip-hop. I don't think it's any good. I listened to it for a second.
Oh, man. How could you refuse? It's so good. All right. I like his hip-hop. I was rocking out to I forget. It's like something two taps or something like.
I will give you credit for discovering it and putting me on it, but I must have heard a bad song. Sony Michel, I got to stick to football for now. Maybe he's got a career.
I enjoy his hip-hop, but no.
Music is subjective.
This is a guy who had virtually no passing game work. He's on a winning team with the Patriots. You know that this position on the Patriots can produce. We saw LeGarrette Blount sort of in this role for a couple of years, producing touchdowns fairly well. Michelle was injured for a lot of last season, so it's hard to really look at volume and take a whole lot away from it. But he did have 209 carries, 931 yards in the 13 games that he played in, a few of which were sort of injured games. And then we've got your boy, who you discovered preseason last year. And if people were listening to these fucking pods last year, they probably won their leagues off of this. Philip Lindsay from Denver, who emerged. Now, he's got Hoyce Freeman in the wings, but he emerged.
He didn't emerge for us. You and I, we were telling people to take him with your last pick of your draft, and everyone else was burning all their fab in week two, when he exploded in week one. But if you go back to the pods, like you said,
I was just gonna say, hopefully you took Philip Lindsay and he made up for the terrible reach for Kenyon Drake that I was putting out there.
we're gonna get some wrong, we're gonna get some right. The idea is hopefully we get more right than wrong.
I mean, listen, I can only play logic. I can't look into the mind of Mr. Fruit Loops and figure out that he's gonna fucking roll out like Frank Gore on a losing Miami team for 14 touches a game.
But before you get much deeper, right. Before you get much deeper into this list, I want everyone to go print out their cheat sheet. I want you to go get a black marker and start scratching off Sony Michel's name immediately. Okay, we're not taking him in the third round or the fourth round where he's going right now. He's going there because he looked really good in the playoffs, but this guy is an injury risk. He hasn't even shown up at practice since May 20th. He's been out for three or four weeks now. The Patriots drafted Damian Harris out of Alabama in the third round. That's significant draft capital, and I think they did that because they're worried about Sony Michel. Sony Michel had some injury concerns coming out of college, and we like him. We do like him, but we don't like him in the fourth round. We don't like him in the late third round. If Sony Michel fell out of the top five rounds, we're interested. But right now, let's just scratch him off and let's take a little bit of whoever we like over there, some of the running backs there, and we'll grab Damian Harris with a late pick, and we'll feel a lot better about it.
The injury concern
is very scary.
And plus, you have a Patriots team that certainly is no lock to hand volume to anybody. So, you have some volume running backs potentially in this group. And I'll actually ask you where you think Michel should fall at one point. Like, is he now below Kenyon Drake, below Tariq Cohen, below Lamar Miller in your mind?
If you're following our cheat sheets in our rankings, you're not going to really get him. I'm pushing right now, today. Again, we're just gathering our facts. We're detectives. We're trying to figure it out. But I'm even taking players like Ronald Jones ahead of him.
Wow.
I'm more aggressive on than the market. I think Ronald Jones is going
to
end up.
Hold off on the sleepers. We'll get to that section.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But so right now, you know, the seventh, eighth round for Michel, which is just not happening. I don't know. I'm petrified of Michel. I'm sitting there ringing the alarm, pushing all sorts of buttons, and I don't see really too much concerned. I mean, he's regularly getting drafted in the third round. So
Won't. What you're saying is, you see, and this is the beauty of value-based drafting in many ways, where a lot of times, and I have a surprise for you, season long says, but in a second here, but a lot of what we're trying to do is we're measuring, and that's kind of what the order that I'm spitting out these names is coming from, kind of looking at current ADPs for the position. And so this is about where these running backs are being valued by the market. And that's the easiest way to get your baseline. Okay, what does the market say? Now, just like sports betting or anything else, you don't make money by going 100% with what the market says. That's like just, you know, if you did that, you in sports betting, you'd be 50% and you just lose the VIC. In the case of fantasy football, that's pretty much where you end up too, right in the middle of the pack, and you will not win your leagues. So the idea is, all right, what does the consensus think about this guy? And what does a sharper expert say? Oh, the consensus is wrong here. And that's in essence what you just got, what the call that you just made. You said, all right, and we talk about that all the time, but I like to point it out to really clarify what's going on. Because this is what I do in other areas of daily fantasy sports and sports betting. I'm not looking at who I think is going to win or lose an MMA fight, for example. What I'm looking at is, oh, the market implies that this guy has a 28% chance of winning, whereas I think he has a 40% chance of winning. I want that spread. Same thing with the player values here. The market says this guy's a third-round player, or how about the market says this guy's an eighth-round player. I think he's a fifth-round player. I'll take him in the seventh. You know what I mean? That's what we're trying to. We're trying to beat the market. So the market, in a sense here, is ADP. What is his ADP? Sony Michel is going off the board, RB20, right now. Today. And what you're saying is, listen, he could be going off RB20. I have him as RB33 or 35. So, shit, if he's still there at 35, okay, I'm interested. But I'm not going to touch this guy here. And that's essentially what a lot of this analysis is. So I want to explain that. And, Alan, what I wanted to mention to you is exciting is DFS Army is putting together our first ever sort of full blast fantasy football season-long draft kit. And we'll all be doing rankings for it. And it's going to be very cool. There'll be notes, rankings, a lot of this stuff sort of all organized on a page. You will be involved and well as well if you like. So that is just something that's been coming together today. All right, very cool. So nothing to do with Michelle. Let's get back to this grouping before. Sorry, I went off on a tangent, but those are really important factors that not everybody fully grasps in terms of what it is that we're trying to do here with some of this stuff. We're trying to beat the ADP.
And simply said, I think you're trying to identify the market inefficiencies and exploit them.
100%. I mean, with all sports gambling, including daily fantasy sports against the salary cap, including betting the games. It's all a matter of where is the consensus and where do you think you might have an edge. And that's what we're trying to do with our fantasy draft as well. All right, so let me ask you just a couple of these. I know you love Philip Lindsay. Do you have any concerns about Royce Freeman sort of stepping up and doing a little bit more this year?
So I love Philip Lindsay, but I need to tamper the brakes a little bit. I love Philip Lindsay last year. I'm a little concerned this year. And the reason is, again, he only had a wrist injury, which put him on IR last year, and that doesn't affect his long-term health. But the wrist injury was gruesome. Actually, I did a little dive into this, and if you look at the back of your hand, his fingers actually touch the top of his wrist. That's how he broke his wrist. He may or may not be ready for training camp. Hoyce Freeman, as we call him, you know that. He's been getting all the first team reps, and by all accounts, he has been doing well. I'm concerned with Lindsay at his current draft spot in the fourth round, and I think if he's ready, he'll be fine. I just don't think we should expect what we saw from Lindsay last year, only because Freeman is going to be much more involved, and I think Freeman will improve in year two. So those two are going to be tougher to figure out, whereas last year you took Lindsay, you plugged him in right away. So I'm a little concerned that his current cost, I haven't been getting much Lindsay this year in the fourth round.
Interesting. So are you taking, for example, and I'll throw the rookies out here. Are you taking Josh Jacobs? Are you taking David Montgomery? Are you taking even Miles Sanders, who, for whatever, I don't know why, according to ADP, is going well after those other two rookies, but are you taking those three before you're interested in Philip Lindsay, or at least Montgomery and Jacobs, who are both ADP in a similar range? Like I said, Miles Sanders is really not going in that range at all for, I don't really agree with reasons, but nonetheless.
Yeah, Jacobs is now, he's a solid third round pick. He's been going in the area, and rightfully so, with Derrick Henry and those players. I mean, he was drafted in the first round. He can catch passes. Gruden handpicked him. He's gonna get fed. So I just think opportunity alone is a good enough reason.
I mean, he doesn't have much competition over there. They brought back the ghost of Doug Martin, I think, maybe. They have Jalen Richard as a sort of third down gimmick back. There's not too much going on in front of him.
And Jalen Richard, I've been taking him still in late rounds. I still think he'll be involved. And there's, you know, DeAndre Washington still there. And there's a few pieces that mix in. I think that we can count on Josh Jacobs to be an 18-touch player. I wouldn't be surprised about the gate. He's not about a 14-touch player, and they build him up. But his opportunity, upside, and draft pedigree do warrant him being in the third round. So I would take him above where I would take Lindsay. Now, the other two rookies are interesting. David Montgomery is being drafted in the fourth, fifth, the end of the fifth round latest, and he's being drafted like he is the locked-in three-down starter. The proponents of him think since Jordan Howard was traded, Cohen is still there, but he's going to be used more like a gadget player, according to those drafting him. But what I think people are forgetting is that they paid Mike Davis. Now, I know Mike Davis doesn't blow anyone's mind, but Mike, are we sure Mike Davis, the veteran guy, isn't the starter? Do we know that David Montgomery is an elite blocker and could protect Mitch Trubisky? We don't know that. They paid Mike Davis a pretty penny, a few million bucks, and they have him for this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Davis is, one, the starter, and two, early on in the season, leads the team, the running backs, in snaps. I'm not drafting David Montgomery at his fifth-round price. In fact, I'm going the other way and taking Mike Davis later on. I'd certainly take Philip Lindsay, because I know that was your question, above David Montgomery at this point. And I'm just surprised. And I see the upside with Montgomery. I'm just not understanding his cost. He is being drafted like he is the locked-in three-down starter.
One of the good things, I think, with that situation, because I'm not in agreement about Mike Davis. I do not agree that Davis is there to be some sort of a starter. But then again, anything can happen. Last year, I didn't think that Chris Carson was going to be starting for Seattle. Last year, I didn't think that Peyton Barber was going to start for the Bucs. So, obviously, again, I always come from a logically, why the fuck would you do that point of view? But yet, these teams do things that are fucked up. One of the good things, though, is we'll know as we get closer to the actual season. As we're recording this, it is June 7th. We will actually, you know, this is an early breakdown of the running back position. When we come back and do another running back position breakdown in July, things are going to be different. Like, the outlook will have changed. And then in August, once the actual beginning of training camps are happening, and we're seeing players playing, we're seeing what's going on in these games, the preseason games are going on. Again, a whole new set of knowledge. But so we're breaking some stuff down right now without 100% knowledge. That's what you got to do. Hey, best balls are active right now, and I'm fucking playing them like a maniac. I know you've done 25, 30 of them. So I've got about 15 best balls going right now as we speak, because it's a fun time of year for them. So I mean,
oh yeah, dude, they're so much fun. You know, I mean, we've talked about that ad nauseum as well. And you mentioned Carson, by the way. If you still have your pen out, scratch him off your list too right now. Carson has had off-season knee surgery, and he's being taken in the fifth round. We got to start thinking about Rashad Penny a little bit earlier than most. I know his ADP was in the eighth, ninth round. I haven't seen that. Every draft I'm in, he's being taken in the seventh. I've gone late sixth on him. I think that's the sharper move.
On this sheet currently, and it doesn't go by round, because it's very tough to go by round when we're not specifying 10, 12, team.
Well, the assumption anytime we talk about round, we're talking about 12 teams and we're talking about PPR. Yeah, and let's say some sort of league that should be understood as our standard.
100%, totally agree. And you know, he's going as RB 35 right now. So at RB 35. That's
yeah, but you shouldn't take him there. You should take him around closer to RB 24, 27.
That I mean
somewhere.
That's wild. So I mean, yeah, I mean you'd be pushing him ahead of a lot of these names that we just sort of talked about as, you know, potential fades. The Montgomery's, the Chris Carson's and Sony Michel's of the world here, and also potentially ahead of some other guys that I think are these, you know, the Tariq Cohens and the James Whites of the world, right? Your third down pass catchers.
James White's a great player. He's always, you know, he's always a value in drafts. You always get him in like the eighth or ninth round of your drafts. And, you know, at some point they just go to him. He's trusted by Tom Brady. The problem is now if you got to take him earlier, he's not consistent week to week, nor is any Patriots running back. So it becomes a problem.
Let me throw out a backfield situation for you. I'm going to stump you a little bit, or maybe not. But this is a backfield that is very confusing for me. I actually like this kind of thought process because this really...
Can I take a guess which one you're going to ask me about?
All right, go ahead.
Are you going to ask me about the San Francisco backfield?
Well, that one too. So I have two. They're definitely there. I don't think you're going to have a great clarity on San Francisco, though. It's fucking impossible. But
well, I have a take. I don't have clarity, but I have a take.
We'll get to that. But let's start with the Bills because they're the other team that has a fucked up backfield situation. What the hell is going on with the Bills? Seriously, what the fuck is going on with the Bills?
All right, so let's start with the depth chart. Okay, the depth chart has T.J. Yeldon. It has LeSean McCoy. We have who else is there? They drafted the rookie Devin Singletary.
Yeah, they got that rookie, and there's another player on that team. I can't even remember. But
and Chris Ivory?
No, Ivory's off the team. Ivory's off the team.
So we need to start with, do we think LeSean McCoy will be – is Frank Gore on the team?
Yes. That's the one that makes it all even crazier.
So let's start with what I think is the most interesting part. LeSean McCoy, I think, is a strong candidate to get cut off the team. He makes a significant salary, and he's just kind of clogging things up over there.
As opposed to Frank Gore, who's 37 on a losing team, what the fuck is he doing there?
Right. So surprisingly, we don't really want to draft any of these guys unless we're just putting them on our roster late with the hopes things clear up. I think, again, this is just my feeling. We're just detectives. We're just gathering information. It's likely they cut LeSean McCoy. I think Frank Gore, of course, will get his 8 to 10 carries a game, 7 to 10 carries a game. I think T.J. Yeldon is the interesting one here. He was a second-round running back the year he came out. He was always useful when he got significant playing time in Jacksonville. Things didn't end well there for him, but there's no knock on him as a player. He's a good, solid player. And then, of course, we're always interested when they draft a rookie decently high in Devin Singletary, who's a smaller back. So I'm looking at acquiring Yeldon late where I can. And other than that, anyone else, I think you're gambling. It's a bad gamble. So I'm probably staying away from there with the exception of Yeldon late.
Does Singletary, who's a third round pick, by the way.
Yeah, there's significant capital and he's a smaller guy, though.
What do you have on his size? I mean, like when you say smaller guy, what are we talking? Is he like a 200 pounder? Is that he's a 200 pound running back? I mean, what's his story?
Okay, so Devin Singletary he's 5'7". He weighed in at 203 pounds.
Okay.
So he's short and stout.
Okay.
I mean, he's got like, I mean, I think Darren Sproles was what, 5'5", 190. So this is sort of the same build.
That's not workhorse level. It's a little too small.
Yeah, he was drafted in the third round by the Bills, like you said. He ran a 4.6 40, which is good. It's not game breaking speed. Okay, and so we're talking about a player at Florida Atlantic that was a good, shifty player that looks good on tape, certainly worthy of his third round draft capital, his draft position. I like Devin Singletary, and I just don't think we're talking about redraft now. Now, in Dynasty, it's a whole different situation. I just don't see a situation where he's worth anything more than a late, late pick. And if he emerges, great. But I don't think that this is a backfield that's going to be something to invest in the single-digit rounds. I still see LeSean McCoy going in like the ninth round, and I just don't understand it. And now let's say LeSean McCoy is not cut, and he's getting, they're just going to run the tires off him. Singletary almost becomes irrelevant until someone goes down. Again, I just come back to Yeldon as the most interesting guy.
Or this team just leans on Frank Gore and his 3-yard, lob the line smashes, and it's just a disaster to stay away from.
I would have been higher on Singletary, obviously, in a better spot if he had landed in Tampa or somewhere else. I just, again, this situation is tough. And we'll see. I take a look at Singletary's highlights before our next pod and tell me what you think.
Interesting dynasty piece, though. Let's move on to a couple other of these late round guys that are interesting. Like a Miles Sanders, for example, going very late. Now, Miles Sanders, by all descriptions, did you just hear that?
I didn't.
Okay, all right. Something just popped off in my head. Don't worry about it. All right, so Miles Sanders, by all descriptions, looks like a three down back. Looks like he was drafted to be like. Why is Miles Sanders? This is where I'm getting at. Why is Miles Sanders going so far behind Josh Jacobs? What's the difference? I mean, it's not like he has studs ahead of him. You're talking about Wendell Smalls. You're talking about a bunch of guys who ain't shit. So why isn't Miles Sanders on the Eagles? Is he being underdrafted? And is this a player who, going right now outside of the top 30 running backs, we will be kicking ourselves in the ass for not taking this guy top 24 by the time training camp rolls around? Is he going to move up? What's the deal with Miles Sanders? Break it down for me.
Okay, Miles Sanders, for your listeners who are just getting back into football now, he is a running back that was drafted in the second round by the Philadelphia Eagles, so that's very significant draft capital, and he is out of Penn State. The only reason you didn't hear about Miles Sanders the year before last year was because he was Saquon Barkley's backup at Penn State. This was his first year starting at Penn State, and he just blew up. He is a dynamic runner. He can catch. He can run. A very good blocker. The Eagles took him and see him definitely as a three-down back. Now, I think you asked the reason why Miles Sanders is going in the seventh round, and there is a perception out there that the Eagles like to use multiple committees, sometimes even up to four running backs, and that was true. That doesn't mean it's going to be true. Now, they did trade for Jordan Howard. And
that's
Jordan
the issue right there more than anything else.
Yes. So I think Miles Sanders at some point during the year is going to emerge as a player you just can't take off the field. But I think, again, with most rookie running backs, they need to learn how to pass block first. Jordan Howard is an elite pass blocker. He has had trouble. He's been a negative in the passing game, and which is why the Bears moved on from him. But he is a hammer and a threat at the goal line. So Sanders, great upside pick. He's appropriately priced in the round he's going in, and I think he's a future first-round pick. But right now, we have to just be careful with our expectations. But in the seventh round, you're not scared at all.
Yeah, the Howard factor is really the issue right there, because Jordan Howard is still looked at as a talented running back. And you're right, he is talented. His issue was, listen, the Bears didn't want to play a style, and this is going to happen with a lot of these guys who can't catch passes. The teams don't want to play a style where they're telegraphing the play, and with the Bears last year, we saw with the Patriots in the Super Bowl and in the playoffs what happened, where they went away from Michelle in close situations because it was like, I don't want to telegraph if it's a run or a pass. They were doing Michelle White, and then they just said, fuck it, let's bring out Burkhead so we can actually have some mystery in what plays we're running. And the Bears had that problem last year. They tried to turn Jordan Howard into a guy who could catch some passes, and my man was just dropping them. I mean, it's like they gave him a shot. He was just dropping them.
Jordan Howard actually dropped the game-winning touchdown in early in the season too. This could just be bullshit coach speak, but by all accounts, they said Jordan Howard recognized this deficiency in his game and has been solely focused on his pass catching, working with catching specialists. And listen, these guys are professional athletes. They can catch the football. There's obviously some sort of mental block going on that he is this bad at catching the football. So I wouldn't be surprised to see an improvement in that part of his game. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a 50-catch running back, but Jordan Howard, if you look back, I mean, he was giving you like 9 catches in a season. I wouldn't be surprised to see him double that, be like an 18, 19.
None of that helps Miles Sanders. All right.
Well, that certainly depresses his 80.
100%. All right, so let's get into some late-round – actually, you know what? I'm going to actually have you talk about the San Francisco backfield, Matt Breida, the group that there are just too many running backs there. No one knows what the fuck is going on. Jerick McKinnon. What's the story there? We'll jump it in. Tevin Coleman, obviously, never great. There's a lot of mediocrity going on in the San Francisco backfield. It is an offense that I do like and I want exposure to, but should we be messing with any of this trio?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because it's affordable and it's cheap in fantasy. So just
wait a minute. You sound like someone who shops at Marshall's, like, you know, getting that sale price.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in fantasy is worth a pick at a price. We wouldn't take certain risks at certain parts of the draft. Now, and again, it also, you've mentioned this many times on the podcast, that who else is going around there? So, okay, let's just circle back. So going back to last year, San Francisco made a significant investment in Jerick McKinnon. They paid him. They've actually paid all his guaranteed money, so they are no longer bound to him. They can cut him without any repercussions at this point. He got hurt in the preseason and was out for the year. He was sort of penciled in as their pass-catching, outside zone runner, speed back. That's what Mike Shanahan, the coach of San Francisco 49ers, wants to do. Then Matt Breida emerged as an amazing dynamic talent who could catch the football, who could run between the tackles, but it's just too fragile. He's just often injured. And then bring in this year free agent Tevin Coleman, who is very redundant to the skill sets of both of those guys. But basically optimization is redundancy. You can't have enough. I mean, look what's going on with the Golden State Warriors right now. They're dropping like flies in the NBA Finals. And they're still holding strong because they have so much redundancy. So same thing is with football, that redundancy is optimization. And what I mean by that is you have three guys that are doing the same thing. So these, if there was only one or two of them on the team, we'd be paying a third round pick for them. But because we don't know which one of them is going to emerge, and one of them will emerge, and maybe more than one of them at different points of the season, we're not having to pay a top five round pick. You're paying a 7th, 8th, and 10th round pick.
When you say 7th, 8th, 10th, I actually think you're referring to best ball leagues, because these guys in season long are going to be your second to last to your last pick. I don't think they'll be in the 7th or 8th round at all.
Yeah, so you think they're going to be in like the 12th plus
round. Yeah, these are guys that you'll be able to take. I mean, your brain gets trained to best balls where running back fucking fever is on fire, rightfully so. But in your season-long league, these are the kind of turds that are going last. Like, you've got them in your second-to-last in your last round.
I don't think the case is with Tevin Coleman. I still think Tevin Coleman will be a seventh-round pick. He was a hot free agent signing. And, again, we don't know when the preseason happens and one of these guys busts a run, we'll hear some more coach speak. This all could change. But right now, if you're a maniac and you're doing your season-long draft in June, one of these guys will emerge. And like you said, it likely will be the double-digit rounds for two of them. So we're investing not because we know we got the guy, but we have a shot. We have a lottery ticket, more than a lottery ticket. We have a 33% chance at one of these guys, and maybe more of them will emerge. So we're not aggressively drafting the running backs in San Francisco, but if they fall to us at the right price, we're taking one of them, maybe two of them, and hoping that one of them emerges. And the good news is you'll know quickly. You won't have to wait till week 4 or week 9 like Kareem Hunt. You'll know in week 1 or week 2 if you have something there. If not, you cut them and move on.
All right, let me throw another value name at you, and then we'll just get into this whole – actually, I want to get into that whole section of like late-round picks that really have a decent shot to emerge as a starting quality running back, starting caliber running back, somebody who you can start every single week, somebody who potentially can – sort of become that crazy value play that you chose in those later rounds, and now you start them every week, and that's how you change your team around. You don't change your team around by, you know, getting your first and second round picks just slightly brighter than your opponent. You get it because you get a third round level fantasy scorer in the 12th round. So
we're at an hour and 15.
I know, so that's why I want to hammer through a few of these names and real quick.
Okay, we'll wrap it up and then we'll do a part two.
Yeah, without having it go too long. So I'm going to throw a couple of names out there that I think have that potential. And I'm going past the first top, 25, 30 running backs that are being taken. So one of them, and you know him well, is Darius Geis. No one likes the juice right now, but
I don't get it.
Well, it's Adrian Peterson and it's Chris Thompson. But really, Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson? You know what I mean? No one likes the juice.
Adrian Peterson. He recently put out a quote, a public statement saying that he is aiming for 2,000 total yards. You know, that was his peak season, the 2,000 yards. I'm going to take the under on that.
But I'm saying that's the reason why you're not taking juice. I mean, if Adrian Peterson's out there getting fucking volume, then Geis isn't going to get volume this year. So that's the perception. That's what people are thinking. But if he does get the job, if Peterson gets himself hurt, which isn't uncommon for an old man, I mean, fuck, I was dancing at a party the other day, and I literally was, like, doing, like, some raver shit, and next thing I know, I hear this, like, sound, and my leg is shot. My calf muscle torn. Not torn, but, pulled. I've been limping for a week.
Ugh, that is brutal,
It was
man.
Horrible. And basically, he's an old man, too. He knows what Adrian Peterson knows what it's like to tear, to pull your calf when you're just stretching or some shit. Man, that's what happens.
I would venture to say that Adrian Peterson is in better shape than both of us combined on our best days.
I hear you running up and down refereeing basketball games, man. I'd be passed out after about 5 minutes.
Oh my god. So Darius Geis, I was kind of in on him in the fourth round, and now he's falling to the seventh. So I'm super high on him. He was my second favorite running back along. Outside of Saquon Barkley in that class, I didn't think there was much difference between the two of them. We only saw one preseason run from Darius Geis, but it just looks so damn good. I think that once he's on the field and he's rolling, man, we're in a good spot. I'm taking Darius Geis everywhere.
Potential league winner. All right, I've got some other ones here that I think are potential league winners if they emerge as starters. And the other two are guys that we probably mentioned along this podcast, but Rashad Penny, Ronald Jones Jr., are rookies from last year, first round, top of the second round guys that did not get much opportunity last season. Rashad Penny even more so with Chris Carson coming off of a surgery. Ronald Jones Jr., you can get him so late. Ronald Jones Jr., you can get him so late in the draft. And this fucking guy has only Peyton Barber ahead of him in the pecking order. And then the third one I'm going to throw out is from this year, and it's about somebody that we had mentioned, and that's probably Darrell Henderson, just in case Gurley does go down. Maybe it's Darrell Henderson, although I think the other two guys have a much better lock if the guy ahead of them goes down, whereas Darrell Henderson has the concerns. And actually, I'll throw out a fourth name. Darrell Henderson has the concerns with Malcolm Brown. And the fourth name I'll throw out there, although I put him in the worst of this list, is Donta Foreman on Houston, mainly because Lamar Miller just has not been that good. But again, you and I, and you've talked about this a lot, and I agree with it. Donta Foreman coming off having an Achilles surgery over his career, it's very tough to come back from that and be good. So
the Achilles, I'll work backwards. I like Foreman. I think that if he comes back to full form, which is the big question mark, it's just a matter of when he's going to take Lamar Miller's job. Now, the Achilles was not last year. It was the year before. So what we see is what we get. If what he shows in the preseason, what he shows early on in the season is the new Donta Foreman. Now, if Donta Foreman is not back at, to full speed, and he's one of those guys that just didn't make it, then we cut bait and move on.
To be clear, and what I'm explaining, last season we talked about this as well. You had mentioned it, and it's very true, that an Achilles tear is a season not a season ender. It's potentially a career ender, and there have really not been great examples of players coming back from that injury and being explosive.
There hasn't been any examples of running backs coming back that I could think of. Even Adrian Peterson's was an ACL. The last running back that tried to come back from the Achilles was remember Beanie Wells.
Oh my God, was it that long? Is that such a rare injury?
Yeah, it's. I mean, the Achilles. Think about it. These guys are just. These guys are built differently than you and I. These are super athletes. Their Achilles doesn't tear. It just doesn't happen because they're so strong. Their bodies are just genetically formed differently than the average human being. So it is a rare injury. Now, it has happened to other position players that have come back, QBs, receivers. But in running back, it's just because of the skills that are needed at running back, it is a career ender. Now, that said, reports have been good. I like Foreman. Maybe I have a little endowment bias, being that I own him in a few dynasty leagues. So that's there. Now, Ronald Jones, I think the secret's out, so it should be interesting. There is resistance to pushing him up. He was routinely going in the 9th and 10th round of fantasy drafts. But like you said, his competition is Peyton Barber, who we agree is sort of like replacement level running back. Ronald Jones was only 20
years. I think to say he's replacement level is giving him too much credit.
Okay, let's say, again, if you're trying to bridge the gap at running back, Peyton Barber is – I think he's the definition of replacement level.
I just think he's crap. He's not good at all. I don't understand how he's in the role.
But that wasn't really the point, though. The point was that Ronald Jones was a 20-year-old running back coming out of USC last year who it's funny. You hear all these reports, and I was listening to a podcast maybe like 6 months ago that said – The guy on the podcast said that he was friendly with a couple of Ronald Jones, a source as close to Ronald Jones, and he was one of these guys who was immature, who wasn't at 20, who was partying, eating Oreos, playing video games all night, and just didn't understand what it took to make the transition to the NFL, and has said ever since it was a wake-up call. Some guys never wake up from that and just continue in mediocrity, but Ronald Jones did a total body transformation and by all reports has been – one of the best players at Bucks offseason training, and they just said this is like a different player coming into this year. He's still young. I think he's 21 or 22 years old. I think people are going to be shocked what they see when Ronald Jones takes the field, and he realizes that he's still ripe to take the prime opportunity as the Bucks lead running back. Now, he's never been known for catching a lot of passes. I don't think it's going to matter. I think he'll be a yards and touchdown. He'll catch enough passes to be fantasy relevant. If you're getting him in the 8th, 9th round as a steal, I think by the time draft season comes around, he's a 5-6 turn pick, meaning you're going to have to take him in the 5th round to definitely get him. That's
a huge prediction. And our other guy, I mean, I agree with you. I love the opportunity that he potentially has, again, behind a guy who is just not good. And
the Bucks do. Bucks didn't do anything to add a running back. They had a lot. They added Bruce Anderson, who's either a late round or an undrafted free agent, one of the two, and who is pretty good. But, I mean, they just didn't do anything significant to bolster that backfield.
And a new coaching staff with a new set of eyes and an awesome coaching staff that we love on the Bucks. So an awesome coaching staff that we love for fantasy, just in general, but also for fantasy production.
Clean start. You can't underestimate the clean start. I mean, the all clean start team would have to be led by Ronald Jones. I think Devontae Parker is on the fresh, the clean
well,
start.
Let's not get into
again.
No, we're not going to confuse with wide receivers yet. We
can't underestimate the fresh start when a player, especially this early on in his career, gets a fresh start with a new, like you just said, a new set of
remember
eyes.
Remember Todd Gurley? I mean, before his knee was fucked. But when he came off of Jeff Fisher disaster show onto, you know, the Sean McVay Express, and, you know, he went from a shitstorm to the greatest player in the league. So I'm not saying Ronald Jones Jr. is that, but I.
Why don't we end?
Well, we still got Penny, Rashad Penny. One last one.
Look, we talked about Penny earlier. You would ask me, Rashad Penny, I think, is primed to take over.
This guy will win you your league if that happens, though, is what I'm saying. These are the picks.
Chris Carson has had offseason knee surgery. I think Chris Carson's good. He's going way too early. Penny's going way too late in the seventh round. I've been taking him in the sixth round in every single draft I can. Rashad Penny was a first-round pick, and by all accounts, has just looked the part. I think that he was actually sneaky good. It's just that he had a slow start. He didn't get the opportunity. He had a hand injury last preseason, which kept him off the field early on. But if you look at the efficiency stats towards the end of the season, he came on strong. We're all in on Penny. We like him. We're aggressively drafting.
Awesome. All right, we're gonna cap it right there. And I always forget to do what's that.
Why don't we each name one deep sleeper for your listeners who are drafting in best balls now, someone they can get in the double digit rounds, maybe even like the post 13th round, who we like. Any rookies, any strong super handcuffs, any forgotten sophomores from last year? Is there anyone that you could recommend?
I mean, outside of the people we just talked about, I'm going to throw one out there. And for me, it's Judge Ito Smith of the Atlanta Falcons. And the reason being twofold. Number one, everybody's falsely assuming that all of a sudden Devonta Freeman is going to be this workhorse, 25 touches. He's never done it, and he's always hurt. I don't get it, right? Number two, so I think Ito Smith gets work anyway, right? He got some work last year, quite a bit, actually, 90 carries, 27 receptions. This is not a guy – no one knows about him. But more importantly, if Devonta Freeman does get hurt, you have league-winning potential on an explosive offense with Judge Ito Smith, and you can tell your tweeters that I'm aware that I just made that's a made-up nickname, and I don't care.
I think that one's okay.
Oh, that one's okay. All right, there we go. Okay, because you're gonna hear a lot of stupid nicknames if you listen to this podcast regularly.
Yeah, so if you want to dig deep, last pick of your best ball, the rookie Justice Hill, who's on Baltimore, this guy is just lightning fast. I know Mark Ingram's a starter. Mark Ingram has never been a picture of health, but I think that they're going to see before long that Justice Hill belongs on the field with Lamar Jackson, a running quarterback. They're going to dump it off to him. He's going to be a nice change of pace. I think that especially in best ball where you don't need to predict the weeks that the players are going to go off. I think Justice Hill is instant lightning in a bottle, and I recommend anyone who is drafting in a dynasty draft to grab him anytime in the second round. And if you're drafting in your season long draft, especially if you have Mark Ingram, but you don't need to, grab Justice Hill late. Look at the YouTube highlights. He's just electric. Rookie running back, Baltimore Ravens, fast as hell.
I like it. And a very deep sleeper, because a guy that you can really get super late on a team that's going to have 30 to 35 running back carries every single week.
Yeah. Baltimore led the league in rushing attempts, and I expect them to do the same. 100%.
They're going to have a lot of carries available. That is they run a gimmick offense based around running and running. They're doing their own thing. All good stuff. All right, we're going to cap it here. I always forget to do this sort of promotional stuff in the beginning of the pod, so I'm going to break down a couple of things for people to expect. Number one, obviously, podcast sponsored by DFSArmy.com, where we will have all of our rankings. Myself, Season Long Says, some other DFS Army staff will be involved. All of our season long rankings, these breakdowns, full draft kit in the works. We're going to help you crush your season long fantasy football teams. Alan, Season Long Says, will be around answering season long questions all season long. We've got another staff member who I'm going to announce later on who's going to be involved with that as well, answering questions in our team Slack forums. Our draft kit will be available for purchase for non-DFS Army members, but if you are a DFS Army subscriber, we're going to include that with your subscription. It's a $29.99 value. It's awesome stuff, but mainly we want to help our people crush their leagues. So that's what we're here to do. We're answering questions in our team forums. We're doing these breakdowns. We're going to have notes, breakdowns, all that good shit. It's early in the season. It's June. So we got a ton of time to continue to analyze these games, these breakdowns. We've got advice for your dynasty leagues. Alan and I are in a bunch of dynasty leagues together at this point. So, I pretty much know everything you're going to do a minute before you're doing it. and vice versa. So
yeah, while I was going to recommend to the listeners, not only experiment getting into these dynasty leagues, also in a future podcast, what we're going to do is come out with a list of the 10 things you should be rule changes you should be doing in your dynasty league. In your redraft league.
Redraft league. So if you're a commissioner of a redraft league, season long has been on the cutting edge of coming up. And one of the things I like about the way you commission a league is that you're not quick to pivot away from something that's not, you're quick to pivot away from something if it didn't work. So that's one of the cool things, bringing the latest sort of rules into play, you know, dumping defense and kicker and adding some different positions, a lot of cool stuff. Like, we won't talk about it now.
Yeah. We'll do a whole pod on, how to give your boring fantasy league.
That is a very cool topic for a podcast. Also, keep an eye out for the Daily Fantasy Sports season-long championship challenge. That is something we're about to introduce. I haven't even told you about it yet, Cez, but we're doing something really cool, something I've thought about for years. Yeah, it's going to be a big, massive challenge, lots of people, a massive prize at the end. Kind of like, think about some of those high-end, you know, fantasy football championships, but done through Daily Fantasy Sports. So in essence, it's a hybrid version of season long. It's going to be lots of games. It's going to be, you know, 3-4 weeks and a half elimination. And then we'll get to a group stage and then a head-to-head stage. And finally, we'll be crowning the Daily Fantasy Sports season long fantasy football champion. Big prizes. Lots of cool stuff coming. We've got it. It's just fun stuff to do, to get involved with fantasy sports, season-long fantasy sports, daily fantasy sports. We're bringing it all together at DFS Army. Alan, this was awesome. Thank you so much for doing another pod. Next one, I think we'll be back with the wide receiver position, and then we'll kind of get into quarterback and tight end. We'll combine those into one pod because those two positions probably combine into one thing. And we'll be doing that. And then we'll come back around and do some topical things, some season-long commissioner stuff, and then come back around later in the season to sort of refresh some of these things and see what's changed since earlier pods. So we've got a whole summer of awesomeness on the way.
My favorite time of the year.
Yeah. All right, my man. Until next time, DFS Army, Bold Call, season-long fantasy football podcast. I'm Kevin Allen. You are season-long Cez, and we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, boy.